Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast on day one of Wimbledon. It is coming to an end. It is brought to you in association with The Telegraph. The Tennis Podcast is, as always, we are sponsored by the new home of the US Open, Amazon Prime Video, and their excellent presenter, Catherine Whittaker, also presenter of the Tennis Podcast, is here after her day off. We finally managed to get hold of her, and she's gracing us with her presence, wrapped in a Wimbledon towel on the broadcast roof of Wimbledon. Catherine, and the reason you're wrapped in a towel is because, what is it, 7:30 at night as the towel flies off her shoulders and now she's covering herself up again. It's because it's cold, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's beautiful blue skies, but on day one, in which Roger Federer has won serenely early on in the heat of the day, in which it was said to be 38 degrees Celsius at one point, Stan Wawrinka has won a four-set epic with Grigor Dimitrov, all this stuff's happened, it's suddenly cold.
Yeah, there was a point today when I was so hot and sweaty I couldn't imagine ever being cold again. But here I am, sat on the broadcast roof in a lovely breeze, which I was desperately hoping would come earlier. And yeah, I'm having to wrap myself in a Wimbledon towel, which happily goes absolutely perfectly with the on-brand dress I've worn today. I have accidentally matched the official Wimbledon colours, which has been commented on everywhere I've gone.
As have I, with my tie.
Yes, you have. I feel like the kid that brings an apple for the teacher on the first day of school. Like,
creep, yeah, honestly.
I know.
Horrendous.
I know. But anyway, the Wimbledon towel, it's like it was designed to go with my dress. It's like it's sort of the official two-piece.
Yeah. So we've had day one nearly. There's still a few matches going on, but all the centre court's done. Court one's finished. Serena Williams has returned and won. So we'll talk about all this stuff. Before we get into that, we haven't spoken to you for a while, Catherine. Last time was final day of Queen's.
You're
since
making
then,
me sound like a right part-timer,
well,
David.
You know,
one day off in 6 weeks.
Yeah, I know. Well, you've missed a show and we're all annoyed about it because we wanted to know what you got to say about things, especially when Andy Murray went and withdrew yesterday. You were down in Eastbourne, first of all. We'll just cover off Andy Murray very quickly because we didn't have time to talk about it with Simon Briggs yesterday. But you were down in Eastbourne. You saw Andy Murray beat Stan Wawrinka, a very different looking Stan Wawrinka to whom we saw today. Your reaction?
Well, I was surprised that he was in the draw at all on the basis of what I saw in Eastbourne last week, particularly
Stan.
Andy Murray.
Oh, right.
I've revised my opinion slightly on the basis of what we've seen from Wawrinka today. My opinion was Murray was okay against Wawrinka, but Wawrinka wasn't up to much in Eastbourne. Didn't fancy it, just couldn't really give it his all, was obviously partially impeded, partially just holding back. I thought, yeah, Murray was fine, but didn't need to be much more than fine. And I found the performance against Edmund a worry. I went out to watch quite a bit of it and I left feeling a little bit sad. I left feeling Murray's not going to play Wimbledon. There's no way he's going to play Wimbledon. And then there he was in the draw. And then I thought, well, he's not going to pull out after the draw because he got such stick about doing that at the US Open. And then lo and behold, yesterday happens. I think it can only be the right decision. I can't see a way on the basis of what I saw against Edmund that he can possibly play five sets. I don't doubt that he will do everything possible to be in a position to do that at the US Open and the Australian Open. I desperately hope that that will be the case. What I guess happened is he was in a bit of denial, wanted so desperately to be able to play here, and perhaps maybe someone close to him sat him down and said, Andy, don't do this. I don't know, that's pure speculation, but I can imagine that having happened.
Reading the stuff that Simon Briggs wrote late last night, he got a chance to speak to Andy Murray with a pack of the other reporters, and it certainly seemed as though what Andy Murray doesn't want to do is come back and just play for the sake of playing. That's basically what he said. If I felt this was just my lap of honour at the end of my career, fine. But I actually want to be a serious tennis player. I want to compete for this title. And I don't want to play and just win a match and then have to maybe withdraw from the next one.
It's funny, though, in his phone conference he gave from his hospital bed in January to the journos after he had his surgery, at that time he said he was up for just coming, he just wanted to play tennis again, and I'm up for just coming back and getting those feelings, and I don't mind being, I think he used the example of being 30 something in the world. But then really interestingly, when he beat Wawrinka last week in Eastbourne, his first match back, he said, I'm not as happy as I expected to be. That quote really hit me. And it's obviously a feeling I think a lot of people can relate to, that sort of wanting something so badly and then when you get it, the emotions not being what you thought they would be. But I don't know, something about the way he said it was quite profound, really, and made me, I don't know, it really struck a chord with me. And I thought, yeah, maybe he's realised that's not going to be enough. So, goodness me, I hope we see him at the US Open, and I really think it's the right decision on the basis of what I've seen and what I know. So, but having said that, I have revised my feeling on where he's at a bit on the basis of what we saw from Wawrinka today, because he's obviously up to more Wawrinka than I gave him credit for.
Well, that was uplifting today. I've just come off commentating on that match, and he went 5-love behind, did Wawrinka, after 18 minutes, and it was like somebody had given him somebody else's legs.
We exchanged texts, didn't we, expressing concern that it might be embarrassing for Wawrinka.
Yeah, I mean, we were all building this match up when it came out of the draw for Wawrinka, three-time slam champion against semi-finalist here, Dimitrov. This is going to be epic. And yeah, after a set of it, 6-1 Wawrinka, it looked really ugly. It looked as though this could be just
6-1
over.
6-1 Dimitrov.
6-1 Dimitrov, yeah. And then he got a couple of good holds at the start of the second set, and it was like he'd arrived. Suddenly the real Stan Wawrinka had just arrived. There was a resolve there. His legs suddenly looked as though they belonged to him again and were going in the same direction as he was sort of pointing the joystick, you know, when you're controlling somebody on a computer game and then they sort of wander off in the wrong direction. You're thinking, what's gone wrong with the computer game? Well, that was what was happening with Stan Wawrinka. And suddenly he got himself back together, and then he started to hit the ball with authority, and he got inspired. That was the first time I've seen Stan Wawrinka get inspired since returning, and he gives it that guttural roar, and the crowd were really pulling for Stan. That was what really struck me, and he won the next two sets in tie breaks. Just brilliant stuff. And we saw some of the old failings of Dimitrov. The nerve went. He was serving for that. I think he was serving for the third set, and basically I picked it on air, and I thought, he struggles with this stuff, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if he gets broken.
By this stuff, what do you mean?
Of getting tight, of gripping the racket too tightly when he's serving for a big set or a big moment, and he can't free himself.
Did
anymore.
His serve go? Because he struggled
everything
a lot with
went.
Double faults.
Everything went, Catherine. It didn't feel like double faultitis out there today. It was like he would press. He would press too hard. And the contrast between him and Federer in the first match, where you just see the loose grip that Federer has on the racket by comparison, the way he just flows about. And even after all these years, Federer's not getting stressed. And Dimitrov is. That scar tissue is there.
What does he do now? Because that scar tissue is in that vicious circle where the scar tissue just keeps building.
Well,
obviously, first port of call, come and apologise to me for my having picked him to make the quarterfinals.
You didn't.
I did.
Oh, so did
I. Well, I looked at the draw. I thought he had a decent draw.
I thought
if he gets through today...
I've had a terrible day on the predictions.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in detail.
I've got
in
Sloane
due course.
Stephens
where does Dimitrov go from here? That is amazing.
She's already out.
Where does Dimitrov go from here, quickly?
To be fair to the guy, he keeps on putting himself on the line. And a year ago, he lost badly to Roger Federer here, and it wasn't even a match. And he ended up winning Cincinnati, and he ended up winning the O2. He was brilliant, second half of the year. But he hasn't been
not
very
at the
good
slams,
all year.
Though.
No, he hasn't
not at
been
the US
very,
Open.
He's not been very good all year, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, for his sake and for those that enjoy watching him play. But I am a glasses half full kind of chap,
no.
as you may have gathered, and I am just thrilled for Stan Wawrinka because he was inspiring and he was brilliant.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah, I've covered my impressions of him in Eastbourne last week. I actually thought in that win for Murray over him in Eastbourne, I was sitting next to Gigi. Our seats were practically on the court. They'd put out this additional press seating because there were so many more media in town after Andy Murray announced that he was going to be playing there. So we were practically sitting on the court, whispering in very hushed tones. And I said, why isn't he celebrating more? Why, you know, this is what he's wanted all this time. He's in a winning position. He's, you know, even after there were a couple of classic Andy Murray rallies and he just wasn't doing the clenched fist or anything. And Gigi said, and I think she's right, it was out of respect for Stan and the fact that Stan's obviously just not there. A mutual understanding of being crook, you know, being
yes.
physically crook.
Yeah.
And, you know, I found that sort of heartbreaking and wonderful and lovely. And I think Gigi got that bang on. So to see what happened today, as you say, uplifting, for me, incredibly surprising. It shows you what the type of player that he is, relying on inspiration.
Yes.
You know, those performances in his three Slam finals that he's won. Okay, maybe you take the Australian out of the equation because of Rafa and everything, but certainly the French and the US just got inspired,
yeah.
didn't he? Completely inspired.
And he brings the crowd with him
yeah.
along that journey, and you could see them. They were just sort of yearning for him to turn it on, and boy, he did. He was brilliant today with Stan Wawrinka. On the centre court as well today, Roger Federer was imperious. We had this whole thing about his kit. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen such a palaver made about a kit since 1991 and the first year that Andre Agassi played this tournament, and he came out onto centre court having spent years saying, I'm not going to wear white. No tournament is going to tell me what to wear. And then he unveiled the most pristine all-white kit you've ever seen in your life, and everybody was making huge noise about that in the papers and on the radio and on the TV. And today, well, he was wearing white, was Roger Federer, as we expected, but he was wearing a little badge on his shirt that wasn't a swoosh of Nike, and it was actually the word Uniqlo.
Not a swoosh, David, but not the RF.
No.
Not his trademark logo, which Nike still own.
Yes.
Now, he said a line in his press conference afterwards that he hopes that Nike will be nice and let him have that back. I don't get the impression, David, that Nike are going to feel charitable about that.
They don't strike me as the nice type of people.
Well, I mean,
they might be nice, but
look,
I was chatting to
Oliver Brown from The Telegraph earlier, and I said, you know, we were speculating about the sums of money involved in that move, and I said, look, I'm sure there are astronomical sums of money involved. I've heard speculation about $30 million a year, not in any way confirmed, but those are the sorts of numbers that I've heard thrown out there. But it has to have been about more than money. I don't believe that is a purely financial transaction and decision that has gone on behind the scenes for Federer to leave Nike, to leave his logo, something completely synonymous with him. It takes decades to build a brand like that. Decades. And most players can't do it. I mean, even Rafa, who has his own logo, it's nowhere near as big and
good logo, though.
It's a great logo.
Love
and
it's
huge
logo.
I mean, and you know, as tennis goes and personal, but it's amazing, but in terms of international recognition, it's nowhere near the RF. I mean, that's as good as it gets. There, I have set Oliver Brown the task of finding the story there.
Oliver,
because there is a story
we task you with, right? Incidentally, though, the only sight of the RF logo anywhere to be seen today during that match was A, on all the people that were surrounding our commentary box, because there were dozens of people holding stuff up and wearing the RF cap. And also, Roger Federer had it on the clear cellophane wrapper that his rackets come in.
Well, the other thing is, I believe he's still wearing Nike shoes.
Is he?
Because a lot of players do have separate shoe deals.
Intrigue about.
Well, that strikes me as very odd indeed. Yes. I mean, the whole thing, I'm telling you, there's a story there and I want to hear it.
All right, fine. Well, we'll find out. Federer looked as good as ever, frankly. I mean, he's 36.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
He didn't look like he's dropped anything. But early stages, of course, and Dusan Lajovic, not the sternest opponent that he will face over the course of the week. It might be Marin Cilic if they get to the semi-finals. He was a straight sets winner today.
I tell you what, though, David, someone removed from his path is Borna Coric. He lost today. That was a potential fourth round opponent. The champion in Halle beat him in the final.
Daniil Medvedev was the man who beat him, and he's had a tough time.
Coric had some treatment on his foot in the final set, but still, from what I've heard, I didn't see much of it. I don't think that injury was decisive in the match, from what I gather. So that's a tough loss for Coric, who suddenly seemed to be coming good on all the promise after a couple of stuttering years. So, yeah, he's still young, but that is good news for Roger Federer, who already had a pretty good draw.
Yes, well, he does have a good draw.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Caroline Wozniacki sailed through. She was the second match on centre court. Really played very well today. But really, I mean, the big story of the day was the return of Serena Williams. Third match on court one today. She was up against, I don't really know how to say this name, Arantxa Roos?
Roos, yeah.
Yeah, okay, of the Netherlands. It was a close first set. I mean, the commentary I was listening to from Jonathan Overend on 5 Live, the gist of it was that she was just punching the air, two fists at points, that the sort of celebration she would normally reserve for title wins. But you can imagine that is what is required in her mind, and that's how big a deal this is to be making this comeback the way she has. I mean, I was asked to recount what she's been through with her childbirth, and I looked it up to remind myself, and I didn't realise quite how close to just a critical, fatal even situation this was, and the blood clot she endured in childbirth and the 6 weeks she had to have in bed. I mean, it's just been an extraordinary ordeal that she went through physically, and then the mental challenges. And we were talking about on air how 10 years ago you would not have had that press conference that she gave. Obviously, now she's given birth, so this is a big event in her life. But 10 years ago, you would not have had a press conference in which she laid bare her vulnerabilities and the experiences she'd had and the postnatal depression she'd endured. And I just find it really quite uplifting that not only is her tennis now such a big deal, the way she's approaching issues that everybody faces at one time or another or could face are being related by one of the biggest names in the world, not just in tennis or in sport, one of the biggest names out there, and just making people talk about these important issues.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Interesting that she, after all that speculation about whether she would wear, you know, an all-white jumpsuit at Wimbledon, and that was all quashed very interestingly by Annabelle Croft, actually, I think, on the Eurosport French Open coverage, by explaining that outfits have to be submitted by clothing sponsors 10 months in advance to Wimbledon for approval that they meet a clothing standard. So I don't know, coaches obviously don't have to do that, because there's that little story about Jamie Delgado having to change his top on the practice court a couple of days ago. But yeah, so she was wearing, because we know she explained that a big reason for the cat suit, as we're calling it in Paris, was they acted as compression tights, compression stockings to prevent blood clots. And my mum's had a DVT, and she doesn't let me get board a plane without a good pair, if not two, of compression tights in my bag.
Good.
And so it's very, very important. And interestingly, here she was at Wimbledon. She obviously, the dress, etc., was pre-approved, but she was wearing flesh-coloured leggings, which technically, David, don't abide by Wimbledon's dress policy. Now, I've no doubt that that won't be queried by the All England Club for various reasons, but it's interesting. It does... Does it potentially highlight how potentially ridiculous the policy is? I don't know.
I mean, I haven't seen this outfit, I have to say. I haven't seen the highlights today. I'll have to have a look.
It's a normal white dress, and she's wearing flesh-coloured leggings. You had to sort of squint closely. It was only on the close-up that you can tell that they're leggings.
I have to see this. Interesting. Okay.
But so, she was very, very good.
Yeah.
I thought... difficult to tell, isn't it? Her movement was, it wasn't so much the speed, it was more the quickness off the blocks, the changing of direction that isn't quite there. But I was impressed with how emotional she was in Paris. That it took until that Gerges match and to really kick into gear, that real emotion on the court, and then obviously ramped up in the Barty match. But it was right there today from the word go. And look, I think she needs to get better, a lot better, to contend for this title, but I think she will as she progresses through.
Yeah. Well, great to see her making progress. Great to see her back. Again, like Stan Wawrinka, isn't it just nice to see these great players able to play the sport again, and hopefully some more of these players will be able to do exactly the same. Venus Williams got a win today in three sets. You got a chance to speak to her afterwards. You're here working for both BBC Radio and BBC TV. You got a chance to speak to Venus. Her press conference didn't go down particularly well with some of the writers I spoke to or read about. I don't think she was overly engaged. Maybe she wasn't overly impressed with some of the questions. I guess yours must have been better, Catherine, because apparently yours went all right.
Well, to be fair, she gave me a tip-off. She sat down for the interview in the plush little BBC TV interview room, and she said, "You know what? Could you not ask me about how old I am and how many times I've played and how long I've been playing?" And I said, "Okay, fair enough. You must get sick of being asked it. In fact, the only thing I was going to ask you about that is how sick you are of being asked about it." And she said, "Yeah, I get that, but maybe just don't ask that question. Come up with something different." She said, "Be more creative." And I said, "Oh, goodness, I feel a lot of pressure to be creative now." And she said, "We're women, we can do that." And I thought, you know, I almost leaned over and gave her a high five, but managed to managed to restrain myself. But anyway, after the press conference, I battened down my hatches and prepared for a not particularly forthcoming interview. But she was, you know, they weren't the longest answers in the world, but I did feel like I learned something from them. I feel like she opened up a bit. She didn't bristle when I asked her about Serena. She gave a really warm answer about how proud she is of her sister. Real, you know, obviously she's going to say she's proud of her, but you really, there was a real glow in her face, you know, that really told you exactly how proud she is. Opened up about how much she missed her, how tough last year was on tour without her. I also asked her about the scheduling policy here at Wimbledon, which has been, it was spotlighted last year, but The Guardian did a lot of pretty detailed scientific research into it and have proven what a bias there has been towards men's matches. And Wimbledon have defended that on the, you know, the old market forces argument, and Venus was completely instrumental 11 years ago in Wimbledon finally giving in and offering equal prize money here, because they held out for a long time. It's easy to forget now, but they held out an awful lot longer than the other slams, and it ended up with Venus writing an open letter to the Times. She gave a speech which ended up being referenced in Parliament. I forgot, actually, that issue was brought up in Parliament. That's how far it went before Wimbledon gave in. So I thought, you know, she was asked about a couple of sort of vaguely feminist issues in the press conference, and she was not being drawn at all, David. She was asked about something Judy Murray had said about, you know, tennis needing its own Me Too movement. She wasn't having that. She was asked about a proposal to alternate, you know, why is it always the men's defending champion that plays on the Monday and the women's on the Tuesday? You should alternate. She said, oh, I hadn't heard about that. So I was thinking, oh gosh, maybe she's just going to take the high road and not be drawn on this either. And she said, in a very calm, measured way, she said, yeah, I that's a shame. I would like it to change, and I would like to work with the All England Club on doing that. And I thought, yeah, great.
Interesting. Another person you spoke to was Katie Swan, the Great Britain player who got a fantastic win today over Arina Camelia Begu. And young Katie Swan, this is her first real go at winning matches at this sort of level. I mean, that's a big win for a start. She's a good player, Begu. I don't know whether she was fully fit or not, or whether
it was just a great performance by
Swan. I didn't get to see it. But, I mean, Swan, there's a lot of chat about, because she was a prodigious junior, and then she struggled with injuries. She's trying to make that transition, and she's now guided by Andy Murray's management company, 77. So what has she got to say?
Yeah, she was number 3 in the world as a junior. Oh, she was delighted, David. Really, really delighted, as you'd expect her to be. But didn't seem to be experiencing any of the whole, like, you know, it's a thing I've dreamed about since I was a kid, and how can it possibly live up to the expectation? It really seemed like it was living up to everything she hoped it would be. I tell you what, it wasn't a plucky Brit digging out a victory. It was a 6-2, 6-2 demolition.
It's
job.
A drubbing,
she was.
And that's clinical.
Brilliant today. And it was clinical.
Compare that to, I mean, earlier in the day, there was a moment when Harriet Dart had a really good performance against Karolina Pliskova, levelled up at one set all, had a horrible fall in the match, and yet, even though the commentators were describing the momentum she'd got in the match, I still had this sinking feeling in my stomach from a British perspective, and we try to be objective, but, you know, we keep an eye out for the British players, obviously, that I still can't see her winning it, you know. And when I was watching that score tick over for Katie Swan, I was thinking, right, when does it go wrong? I know that's a terrible thing to think, but, you know, that was my instinct. So, you know, she's obviously proved that wrong.
Yeah, she really, I think, you know, she's got a tough one in the next round. It's either Sabalenka or Buzanescu. Tell you what, that is a horrible draw for Sabalenka, the Eastbourne. Oh, it's a horrible draw for both of them, but for the Eastbourne finalist to draw Buzanescu in round one. So she plays the winner of that. If it's Sabalenka, she could be, I can't believe Sabalenka isn't completely exhausted. So I don't know. I think she'd back herself to really give it a good go. I like her. She's not precocious, but she has a real self-belief. She's got a bit of feistiness about her.
Anything like Cameron Norrie, you know, who's got a little bit of, you know, bite about him. He's not worried about things, is he?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, in that sense of sort of a good level of self-assurance, yeah. You know, without being cocky. Yeah, in that sense, I suppose.
Norrie, one set all with Aliash Bedene. 7-6, second set for Bedene, 3-3 in the third. You'll know the result when you listen to this. But anyway, we're excited about it as we approach. What time is it? It's 10 to 8 in the evening on the broadcast centre with Catherine shivering underneath the towel.
Thank goodness for the towel.
Yeah, thank goodness for the towel. Where do I get one? Anyway, what else has happened today? Anything else caught your eye before we look at tomorrow?
Wozniacki was very, very good. She won 3 in love, something like that. Yeah. She, you know, considering what a tight turnaround that is from Eastbourne, she was very, very good. What else has happened? Yeah, Pliskova winning 3-3. Harriet Dart, she now plays Azarenka.
Ooh, hello.
Yeah, how about that for a second round match?
Straight sets win for Azarenka today on court 18. I've really enjoyed
that. So, hang on, David.
One.
Yes, yeah. There is something else I'd like to cover, and that is Sloane Stephens.
Oh, yeah, what happened to her? I mean, she lost
6-1,
6-3.
It's always risky to pick her to reach, do anything,
all
isn't
right.
it? Because
well, that's
she
what
could
I did.
Absolutely do it with
I
ease.
I had her in my final.
Which
she
I don't
blew
think,
it.
I have to say, as much as I'd like to gloat, I don't think that's silly. I hovered over putting her into my final as well, but then I thought, it's too risky.
But it's every other slam now. I mean, I think she was first round defeating at Wimbledon. She
just
won the US Open, lost first round at the Australian Open, reaches the final of the French.
She doesn't always fancy it, David. She arrived on Friday.
Oh, I mean,
she arrived in town on Friday, and that's not because she was busy playing warm-up events. She played no warm-up events and only arrived Friday.
Love to
that
read
is not
that
someone
comments.
That is committed to trying to win Wimbledon.
No, I'm surprised. Well, fair play though, Donna Vekic. That's a good win for
yeah,
her.
Yeah, and it's
it?
A horrible draw. And maybe Sloane just thought, oh God, it's too hard.
But you know, it's disappointing, isn't it? You know, you want to see some. You should not have the fourth seed losing 6-1, 6-3.
You shouldn't, and you shouldn't have her only arriving on Friday for a first practice on grass. You know, it's not like she's played a whole lot on this surface in her life. She's not going to take to it in 2 days.
No.
And she was framing a lot of balls. It wasn't, Vekic played well, but she was all at sea, Sloane Stephens. So she's made a fool of you there, David.
Thanks. All right. Well, I haven't seen your predictions yet. Can't wait. You're at the top of the league. I can't believe after two slams, Catherine's second behind obviously Marlis. Melanie Bowes, who's obviously winning again.
She has got some kind of hoodoo going on.
Sick of it. Anyway, tomorrow, everything is stacked up early doors tomorrow because England play against Colombia in the evening.
Yeah.
So they've stuck all the Brits on first tomorrow. Get them out of the way. So there's Naomi Brody opening up against Garbiñe Muguruza, the champion on centre court at 1 o'clock. Then at the same time, basically, is Kyle Edmund against Alex Bolt on court number one. Johanna Konta starts at 11:30 on court number two against Natalia Vikliantseva. There's Del Potro on at 11:30. There's Ash Barty at 11:30. Later on centre court is Rafael Nadal against
Dudi
Sela.
Who's playing in the graveyard England match shift?
Simona Halep's got that against Karumi Nara, as has Novak Djokovic against Tennis Sandgren. Petra Kvitova, who's my pick for the title.
Mine too.
Boo. Honestly.
No
anyway.
Fun. Who have you got her beating in the final?
We haven't even. You know who I've got beating
sorry.
In the final. We've been talking about Sloane Stephens,
sorry.
Who's out of the tournament. Who have you got?
Serena.
All right, whatever. She's still in. Also all this stuff's happening tomorrow. I think that's about it, Catherine. Go and get inside in the warm.
Yeah, I need a hot bath.
Yeah, hot bath in a 30 degree centigrade day here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and sponsored by Amazon Prime Video, the new home of the US Open next month. Can't wait for that. And
it's
we
not
are,
next month.
It is, I tell you.
Oh
you've got a bit of time off after this, don't worry, it's fine. And then we are, of course, executive produced by Melanie Bowes, the greatest predictor of tennis matches in history. Tennisballs.com and Triple S. We're also sponsored by Le Manga Club. Yes, Tennis Podcastaways. Get your entries in. You've only got until the end of Wimbledon to show your love for the podcast in weird and wonderful places. Maybe at Wimbledon. Wear your Tennis Podcast shirt. Wear your new Nod If You Like the Pod Tennis Podcast shirt that we've just released. These are all things that can happen. We have a ferret as our mascot. How cool's that? Charlie, how you doing? Speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.